Hi, and welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. Ryan Balogie, good to have you here with us. Get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Balogie, and you can find all of my work at golfnewsnet.com. Download our apps for your Roku and Amazon Fire TV boxes. And we are presented by the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship coming at the end of August. We're going to be joined by Scott Tomasello from PlayMyrtleBeachGolf.com. We're very excited to have him want to talk about the championship. He's been working on this project, which has grown into this 3,000-person tournament that takes over Myrtle Beach every August. He's been doing it for 8 years, and we've gotten to know each other a little bit over the course of the last year or so, and I was excited to have him on the show to talk about what the experience is like of playing in the World Am, because I've never played in it. This will be my first year doing it in August, and I'm really excited to do it. I love Myrtle Beach. As I've said before, I come down to Myrtle Beach two or three times a year usually, but not typically in the summer. And this year, that's actually going to be different. I'm going to be there the week before with a family vacation and then the week of the World Am. So it's going to be a pretty cool opportunity to be able to play in this. Might be some cool things happening behind the scenes on who I get to play with, but we'll talk with Scott a little bit later on in the show. But if you're interested, before you listen to Scott, in what we're offering, you're going to save some money. If you sign up for the World Am with us, there's still some time to do it. Even though it's July, you've still got plenty of time to do it, plenty of accommodations to pick from. You can head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/WorldAm for more information and find out about our packages. All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the final Quicken Loans National, which wrapped up on Sunday at TPC Potomac. For all intents and purposes, this tournament is dead. It's over. Over after 12 years, started in 2007, and throughout the course of the week, really, especially in the early portion of the week, I was kind of looking into the history of the tournament, because back in 2007, I wasn't really writing even 15 hours a week about golf, and so I was not really totally in tune with what was happening in the world of golf, but I had a good idea. I mean, I was still blogging, just not aware to perhaps the extent I might be now, or maybe I'm not, I don't know. But at the time in 2007, there was a schedule issue, and the FBR Open, which had been played at TPC Potomac, then TPC Avenel, had gone away. FBR had walked away from the sponsorship, the tournament was done. And so the PGA Tour went to the Tiger Woods Foundation and said, hey, we want to give you your invitational, your memorial, your API, your colonial. We want to do that, your Byron Nelson, although Byron Nelson's not open anymore. We want to give that to you in this slot, in this market. We're going to do it on the 4th of July weekend. What can you do? And Tiger Woods and his foundation, with Woods having grown up in a military family, said, you know what, this will work out great. I'll have an invitational tournament, and then we'll go ahead and invite players, and we'll kind of all surround it about the military and thank them for their service and give away a ton of tickets to military members, active, retired, their families, all that stuff. We'll honor them throughout the course of the week, and it'll work out great. And we'll secure a great golf course, and we won't have it at TPC Potomac. We'll have it next door instead of Congressional, which sounds more patriotic. It's got a bigger prestige to it. It hadn't been, TPC Potomac hadn't been fully redone yet, so the players were down on it. So they said, okay, well, you know, let's go ahead and do this. So they create this tournament basically out of thin air. They created on March 6th or 7th. A month later, they announced Congressional is going to host it for a number of years. And 90 days after that, the tournament tees off on Thursday. First ball's in the air. Amazing how quickly it comes together. AT&T hopped on board right away. We have to remember the time. They were Tiger Woods' bag sponsor. They weren't the sponsor of the Byron Nelson at that point. That was still HP's Hewlett-Packard Championship. Remember them. And they put this thing together so fast, and it worked out great. It worked out okay the first few years. So Tiger wins in the third year in 2009. I can vividly remember, the video is still on YouTube, Tiger Woods handing the trophy to himself. He did the trophy presentation at Congressional and acted like he was talking to himself. It was awesome. It was really one of the cooler things that he did in person before he kind of had this renaissance in his 40s and decided to be humble and accessible and gracious and not the Tiger Woods throat stomper, but normal Tiger Woods, normal human being Tiger Woods. And then all of his personal trouble started. 2010, 2011, didn't play. The tournament wasn't even in the D.C. area. It was in Philadelphia at Aronimink because Congressional was preparing to host the U.S. Open. Congressional absolutely screwed up their timetable on trying to get what should have been a 36-month greens project down in 24 months or less. They lost the greens for the U.S. Open. Their standing of the golf community was marginalized because of how well or how poorly the U.S. Open went that year. And then they came back and hosted in 2012. We have the derecho, which was remarkable. That was one of the weirder things that's ever happened to me covering golf. It happened in my hometown. I wrote about that earlier in the week. But Tiger won that week. It was a zillion degrees hot. And then Tiger rushed back in 2014 to play after a microdiscectomy, his first one. Played poorly. And he did that because he wanted to appease a new sponsor, Quicken Loans, who stepped in from AT&T, who moved over to the Nelson because that's in their hometown, and they were done with Woods anyway. And he wanted to make sure Congressional felt the love because they had a really divided membership on whether to continue hosting this thing. They agreed to do an even number of years, 14, 16, 18, 20. So Woods wanted to come back and play as a thank you. He didn't play in 16 or 17, and he never really got behind the tournament in a way a host would, where like you kind of recruit players, you talk to them all year long, you kind of get them in. And occasionally they had pretty good players. I mean, you had Justin Rose commit for a number of years. You had Justin Thomas in. Obviously, Ricky Fowler was a part of it, even though it was a wink-wink because Quicken Loans sponsors him. And you never really got a deep field, large part because the fields were just kind of at the point of the year where it was really difficult to get, and the dates sucked. And you can tell that to Greenbrier, which tried to make something out of it being the 4th of July. That doesn't work. Maybe it does in White Sulphur Spring, West Virginia, but it does not work pretty much anywhere else, especially in D.C. where everyone leaves in the summer. This is a town of non-permanent residents in a lot of ways. I mean, it's not all that way, but in a lot of ways. And in that sense, it makes it difficult to get people to come here and support this tournament because even corporate D.C. leaves town. I mean, when Congress isn't in session, what are you doing? So this is very much a transient population. And the result was the date stunk, weather stunk, schedule stunk. So no wonder the field wasn't good when Tiger Woods wasn't there. When Tiger wasn't the number one draw, the tournament suffered dramatically. And ultimately, that led Quicken Loans to say, we want out of this tournament. We will come back and be a PGA Tour title sponsor, but we refuse to do it in D.C. We will only do it in our headquarter town of Detroit. They're also in Cleveland, but they wanted Detroit. And they got it. They got that. And the only concession they had to make to the PGA Tour to do that was to sponsor, to defray some of the cost of running this tournament, the final national. So it was a weird amalgamation of signage out on the golf course, because throughout the entire year, the PGA Tour had presumed this tournament would be called the National, and there would be no sponsor, and they would underwrite everything. So a lot of the signs had that special font that they created or used for the National name. And then a bunch of the signage, once Quicken Loans decided to get on it, they must have saved from last year or reprinted or something, because they put that up too. So you had like two different competing fonts. It was very strange. And it was definitely an indication of the kind of turmoil the event was under, even just till a few weeks ago. And then there were two news conferences with the big name players of the field, obviously host Tiger Woods and Ricky Fowler. And that was on Wednesday. Fowler went first and was asked, about by the folks of the Washington Post, as they should, that's their beat. What's the future of this event? What do you think about D.C. as a golf town, as a PGA Tour town? And Ricky Fowler kind of played it down like, it's kind of hard, but the fans are great, and it's great to be back here. But nothing. I mean, that's how Ricky Fowler is. He doesn't say anything bad if he doesn't have to, because that would upset somebody, and that's not what he's in the business of doing. So you know, he just kind of downplayed it. And then Tiger was asked again a couple of different times by local reporters, what's the future of this event? Where is it going? And he was pretty blunt about it. He said, I mean, he still made it seem like there might be some hope. There's not. But he made it seem like there might be some hope. You know, we're still trying for a sponsor. We're trying for it. We're gonna keep doing it. And no. I mean, there might be something else that comes with this, but not a PGA, full-fledged PGA Tour event. There could be a clinic. There could be an exhibition, a two-day exhibition, kind of like what they do with the CBS Charity Classic with Faxon and Andrade up in Rhode Island. Maybe that. I don't know. But as a PGA Tour event, this is done. And Tiger said, you know, the issue for this event is getting a sponsor. Duh. And he said, it's just hard to find someone to commit $7, $8, $9 million to be a sponsor. And that's reasonable. The PGA Tour's price tag is too big. The events that have been saved in the last few months, think about Colonial. That was saved by Charles Schwab, which has a zillion-year contract as the sponsor of the Charles Schwab Cup Championship and the Charles Schwab Cup on PGA Tour Champions. Already cutting the check. Quicken Loans, already a 5-year title sponsor on the PGA Tour. They're already cutting the check. They just wanted their location. 3M, which will become a host on the PGA Tour from going from PGA Tour Champions. They were already cutting a check. A smaller check, now it's a bigger check, but it was a check, and they wanted to cut the bigger check. Houston Open, that took Jim Crane, a guy who absolutely loves golf and wanted the tournament to keep going. So basically took an eccentric billionaire to decide to keep that tournament alive. There's not room right now for the National. It's just not. And that's the reality. It's hard to get new companies right now into the fold at a PGA Tour level, sponsoring tournaments at that amount of money. That's why you're seeing an increasing number of tournaments have presenting sponsors, whether they're on the name or not, to handle some of the local costs and get some of the signage component of it. Maybe they don't get all of the TV time that you get for being a title sponsor, but you get some of that. The business of the PGA Tour is really difficult right now. That all said, Sunday was awesome. I followed Tiger Woods for 11 holes. At that point, it was just too darn hot at 98 degrees. I'm sorry. I would have loved to have kept going, but no. And the atmosphere was amazing. You could tell from the get-go, obviously, people wanted Tiger to make a move. And they wanted him to make a move on Francesco Molinari so that maybe he could win. They wanted to see Tiger win number 80 above all else. I don't know how many people in the gallery, obviously, knew this was going to be the last Quicken Loans National. They probably had an idea, some of them, but not all of them. That would be gifting too much information, I think, to the general public that probably doesn't think about PGA Tour scheduling at all, much less to the level I've thought about it. But the crowd was hot, and when he birdied 2, they went nuts. When he almost birdied 4, they were ready to go nuts. Same on 5, they were ready to go nuts. And then on 6, oh man, they just went crazy. His putt on 7, they wanted to go crazy on 6 too. The putt on 7, the atmosphere was awesome. 8 was fantastic. Like the putt on 8, it looked like it was had no chance with 3 feet to go and somehow got in the front door. And then getting him, you know, from 9 to 10, the crowd was super into it. I think they could sense maybe something special was going to happen. But that's precisely where Woods crapped the bed all week. He was bad on the part of the golf course you're supposed to get, which is really a TPC Potomac, 10, 13, 14, and 15. And then you got to kind of hang on 16, 17. Maybe you get a birdie, 18. It's just, good to get a par. And he needed to get to at least 1,500 to have a chance. At least that's, I think, what everyone that was thinking about that thought. Little they know that Francesco Molinari was going to shoot 62. But I think when Woods couldn't make a 6-foot birdie putt after playing a perfect wedge shot in there for his third, that kind of killed everything. Came back nicely on 11, dropped a shot on 12, or birdied 12, dropped a shot on 11, dropped a shot on 13, missed a 3-footer for birdie on 14, which is unforgivable. And then that was kind of it from there. I mean, hey, he finished T4. It's not a bad way to see out a tournament. And it's one of his best finishes of the season. And he continues to do well. I mean, he's got almost a handful of top 15 finishes in 11 starts. He beats up weaker fields, certainly better than he does higher caliber fields, and he's kind of struggled in those bigger name events, but then again, he hasn't had a full schedule of those yet, so maybe he's just playing up to it. I don't know. But it was really cool to see kind of this final time of Tiger Woods playing in my hometown. There is a thought that in 2020 that he could be maybe in the BMW Championship, which could come to Baltimore. There's talk that it could come to Baltimore Country Club, not Caves Valley, although that was in the running, but sounds more and more like Baltimore Country Club because that area has formed a connection with Evan Scholars, and they want to kind of promote that through the BMW Championship, build an Evan Scholars house, all that good stuff. But maybe it'll never happen again. I mean, in 2020, Tiger will be 44. I'm sure he will still be relevant, but who knows? I mean, his back could go out tomorrow, and that could be it. And these days, I still think of Baltimore as where I come from, but I don't think of it as my residence. It's very different from D.C., even though it's 35 minutes apart in ideal traffic. So it kind of felt like a letdown in some sense. Like, man, this is the last time all these people, not all of them, I mean, some will travel and some will go to Baltimore if it's up there and other stuff like that. They'll go to majors. But for most people in that crowd, in that gallery on Sunday, that was the last time they're ever going to see Tiger Woods in their hometown. Maybe more likely the last time they're ever going to see Tiger Woods play in person. It's kind of a sad thought. And there are other stops where this could happen. Obviously, Tiger, if he got into Akron, he could play there one final time. But for the most part, you know, that if he gets into it, will be the final time people see him in person, probably. I can't imagine he'll play PGA Tour Champions, except sparingly. And they'll host the Senior Players Championship there, so maybe, but again, that would be 8 years away. That'd be 2026 till they saw him again. So it kind of hit my mind that this is the very beginning of Tiger's retirement tour. That's kind of crazy to think about, at least as a PGA Tour active player. Again, there could be other places that he can still play and won't have a goodbye of sorts until well down the line, until he's in his late 40s, depending on how his back holds up and how long he chooses to play. But it's kind of sad to think about that. And I was just really grateful to have been able to watch him in my hometown one more time. I'll be able to watch him other places. I mean, that's my job, and I will, and I'll appreciate it then. But there aren't that many times you get to watch someone that great in front of you if they're in a traveling business. You know, how many times would I be able to watch LeBron James play in D.C.? Twice a year, perhaps, if I were a Wizards season ticket holder, for example. And now he's going to the Lakers once a year, but you get the idea. So maybe two dozen times ever you get to see LeBron James play in person, unless you went to go travel to go see him. Tiger Woods, you get less of that. I mean, even less of that. You would get, if you had just stayed in D.C. your entire life, what, 10, 12 entire times ever? And so you got to appreciate him. But you don't until you're like, wait, this is the last one. And that was pretty amazing. So I'm glad that he finished tied for fourth. I'm glad that some people stuck it out to watch him finish. It was really cool to watch him take photos with Bronson Burgoon, his like parents, like wife. It was cool. I mean, that Tiger did not exist when this tournament started in 2007, which is also a really cool way of thinking about it, that how Tiger's changed from 2007 to now. And that was a good evolution. That maybe competitively he's not the same guy, because he's not, but maybe he got worse as a player, but he got better as a person. And maybe that's the right story for it. We'll see what happens. Obviously, we don't know the entire PGA Tour schedule for next year yet. Kind of sounds like it's all pretty much in stone at this point. Things could maybe change in the last minute, but probably never going to see Tiger in my hometown again. And that was an interesting experience thinking about that. Thinking about mortality, thinking about sporting mortality and all that stuff. But anyhow. Before we get to Scott Tomasello, I wanted to give a quick word for our friends at 2 Under. This is the hottest time of year, if you haven't noticed. I noticed walking TPC Potomac the last few days at 95 and 98 degrees. But this is the time of year when you need underwear that performs for you, whether you're on the golf course, in the gym, at the office, even just lying in bed. And that's what 2Under offers. 2Under offers the best darn underwear in the world. Period. End of story. Their Joey Pouch keeps your boys where they need to be, nice and dry and protected. The no-drip tip helps you, especially if you're out on the golf course and need to kind of take care of some business. They'll keep that stuff from getting on your pants or your shorts and looking like an absolute fool out there. The underwear performs great in all conditions. You'll feel great at the end of the round. And then you can change into your 2Under underwear when you get home or for nighttime. They've also got great loungewear, socks, and other stuff that will just make you absolutely happy. Head over to 2Under.com, the number 2UNDR.com, and use the promo code GNN20. You're going to save 20% on whatever it is that you order. Period. All of it. All of it. 20% off. Use that promo code GNN20 and save 20% right now at 2Under.com. I want to welcome in Scott Tomasello. We recorded this interview earlier, and again, I wanted to have Scott on because he's been working on this tournament for 8 years, the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship, for short, World Am. And over that time, it's, you know, 30-some-odd years of this championship, it's grown to a 3,000-person spectacle that pretty much takes over the city in terms of its golf positioning. And it's remarkable what the tournament is, and having not even played in person, even experiencing the 19th hole in person in the past, I'm just super excited to be a part of it. So I want to have Scott to come on, kind of answer the questions that you probably are thinking about if you want to come. And we probably should have done this sooner, to be truthful. We could have given you a better idea sooner about what you're going to experience. But I cannot wait to do this in about 2 months' time, month and a half. And it's going to be a blast. So enjoy this conversation with Scott.
Scott, thanks for joining us. It's really good to have you on the podcast. Obviously, we've been speaking about the World Am for months on our show. But you're someone in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the entire year, working on this the entire year. And I wanted folks, before we talk about this year, get a sense of how this whole thing came together in the first place and the journey from the creation of the World Am to what it is today and what you've observed in your time working with the World Am.
That's a great question, and it has come a long way. This is our 35th anniversary of the event, so obviously it started back in 1984. Just a simple idea to get people to come down and play golf here in the Myrtle Beach area. It's kind of steamrolled out since then. We've got up to 3,000 players for a long time now. And it started really just to get players and golfers to experience Myrtle Beach, and we've maintained that mission for 35 years. And the biggest thing that we like to see is that, you know, we don't really care where you stay or where you play. We just want you to come down and experience the Grand Strand. And that's what we've done for 35 years, and we've kind of seen some changes here and there throughout the, you know, the golf courses come and go, but the people always come year after year, so that's what we like to see.
I was going to ask you about that. What percentage of people do you think are just avid players who they've done it once or they did it twice, you know, somewhere along the way and decided to make it an annual thing?
You know, a lot of people start it thinking that it's just going to be a one-time bucket list experience, which in a sense it really is, because it's not something you can get anywhere else, and a lot of people aren't fortunate enough to get to do it every single year. But we have found that if you do play once, you're average coming back 5.5 more times. So it's something you kind of get hooked on, which is great. We love to hear that. We love having past players coming back. We love to see new faces here and there. But, you know, even if you don't think you're going to come down once, just more than once, you might end up doing it anyway.
And what do most folks who are repeat players, what do they cite? What are the things that keep them coming back?
The what keeps them coming back, in my opinion, is the fact that there's just so many golf courses at our disposal. We have over 80 golf courses that they can play, and we try and do what we can to make sure that they're not playing the same ones over and over again. And, you know, I've been here 8 years, and I've probably only hit half of them, and I consider myself a pretty avid golfer. So, and you know, the golf obviously speaks for itself. There is 60 miles of coastline and beach, and there's plenty of shopping and restaurants. This is a very good food area with tons of seafood, tons of beach and coastline. So there's plenty to do for everybody. That's why it's kind of a family destination. And then the bigger thing, I think, is also the affordability of it. You know, we're a value destination. You can get a lot for your money here. So you know, you can get four rounds of golf for something you might get for one out at Pebble Beach. It's definitely a good value here in Myrtle Beach.
And like you mentioned earlier, I mean, there's a range of golf courses for everybody. I mean, from, you know, barefoot, which is amazing. I mean, dunes. You've got the Caledonia and True Blues of the world that are on the higher end, and then you've got golf courses that are still very good and in great weather for $30-$35 per green fee. So how does that all work out for players who compete in the World Am, getting a mix of the high end and you know, kind of standard?
Right, and like I said, we try and make sure that everybody's getting kind of a good run-of-the-mill experience for Myrtle Beach. So we try and do kind of three criteria for every participant in the World Am. And first and foremost is obviously quality. We want to make sure all players get four decent quality golf courses here in the area. So, you know, we kind of joke around here that, you know, our B courses might be somebody else's A course, or our C course might be somebody else's B course, because we've got so many here. So we try and make sure everybody's getting equal quality. We try and make sure everybody has a similar amount of driving time in any direction. And then most importantly, we try and make sure you're not getting the same courses you played last year. So it is a bit of a puzzle. It's kind of fun to work out and make sure that everybody gets something good. But, you know, for the most part, overall, four courses that you're going to enjoy, four new courses, and hopefully four different types of layouts as well. You know, the only downside to Myrtle is that we are at sea level. That's about the only negative that you can find. But there are so many different designers that you're going to get a different layout pretty much anywhere you go.
Most folks, if they play with someone who is in a handicap, they might play in a flighted tournament at their club or wherever they frequent, but they probably don't play in a flight that's quite as big as they're normally playing in. So what's kind of the range of players an average person is going to expect to see in their handicap range in their flight? Is it kind of, what's the numbers of, if you're a 12, are you going to play with a 10 and a 15 or an 8 and an 18? How does that kind of span out?
Right, so when you have 70 flights here, it can be very minute, those ranges that we have. You know, if you're a more popular and abundant handicap, like the average handicap around here is, you know, let's say a 12, in that range, your handicap flight might be from 11.5 to 12.5. It can be as small as that. And if you're, you know, kind of on the outskirts of the tournament, you know, you could be in the 0 to 5 flight range or the 30 and plus range. But for the most part, you're going to be playing against somebody, A, that's of your same age level and ability level. And that's one of the things I think people appreciate about playing here, is you're not going to be really out of your realm. You're comfortable playing with people that are of similar caliber. And then really, it's really about having fun at the end of the day. There are about 10% of the people who take this very seriously and really want to compete. And then there's the other 90% that are just here to have a good time and make some new friends, which I would stand in that 90%. But it's fun at the end of the day.
And that you answered a kind of a follow-up question to it of what's kind of the general vibe of competition day? What most people don't play tournament golf. They certainly don't play it seriously to win. So what is that warm-up on the range look like for the average player? Is it, you know, kind of one-handing some shots over near the practice screen and then going out and have a good time?
There's a distinct difference between Monday, the first day, and Thursday, the last day. We try and make it kind of as much like a PGA Tour event or as little like a PGA Tour event as you make of it. So that Monday when you're first teeing off, you know, I don't care how seriously you take it, there's going to be some jitters. It's a big event, and it's a little bit intimidating. But, you know, once that first tee ball gets in the air, you kind of relax a little bit, you know. And come Thursday, some people, you know, they just say, you know what, I'm just here to have a good time. I'll have a few beers on the golf course. And then there's, you know, the guys that are grinding it out on that fourth day trying to make it to that championship round. So, you know, it's got a little bit of everything. That first day, I think, is the coolest experience that you can have, because, you know, it's not every day that you get to play 72 holes of golf and actually have a chance to win, even if you're a 19 handicap. It's not something that you can find anywhere. Myrtle Beach is kind of the only place that can actually host something like this.
For folks who maybe aren't used to playing tournament golf, are you walking, are you riding? Do you have the choice where you're kind of options to get around the golf course for the 72 holes?
And we require everybody to ride just for pay-to-play purposes, and we do play by the USGA rules. And some people, like you said, you know, they're not playing tournament golf on a regular basis, so that, that Monday you might see a few accidental gimmies. but outside of that, we do try and maintain the USGA rules, put everything out. We actually just instituted a Just for Fun flight, which has been taken off pretty well, which is quite literally what it sounds like. No scores, no handicaps, just out there to play some good golf. So that's something that we've seen to bring some new players in that, you know, might not take it as seriously.
After golf each day, there's the 19th hole at the convention center. I went sort of a few years ago for one night in passing, kind of was in Myrtle Beach, just happened to be there at the time of the World Am and had an absolute blast. But I probably didn't get to experience the entirety of it. Can you kind of put that into perspective for a potential golfer of what it's like to convene at a convention center with bands and brands and food and drink? Just all the stuff that was happening at a convention center was awesome.
Yeah, it is. I would call it a golfer's paradise, a golfer's playground. You know, if you enjoy golf, you'll enjoy the 19th hole. So, you know, a lot of people after their rounds, they'll have lunch or beer with their buddies in the clubhouse. Just picture this exact scenario only, you know, at a convention center with 3,000 of your closest friends. So we take out the convention center floor space. You know, we've got celebrity guest speakers. We've got open bar, free food, and show you all the latest and greatest in technology. We got live bands. Everybody's entitled to bring one guest free of charge as part of their entry fee. So there's a little bit of something for everybody. You know, you can dance on the dance floor. You can listen to some pros on stage give some lessons to you if you didn't hit it too well on the course that morning. And just let loose a little bit, make some new friends, and see the guys that you've been playing alongside.
For the folks that are maybe there just as much for the beach as they are for the golf, how do the accommodations tend to work out for folks? Do they tend to stay kind of more inland? Do they stay on the beach? Where do folks kind of spread out?
You know, most people kind of gravitate towards the convention center just because that's almost like a home base. That's, you know, the central Myrtle Beach area. We've got 60 miles of coastline and tons of hotels available. So, you know, there's definitely a ton of ocean views available for you. But we do have very good condos inland on resort courses. You had mentioned Barefoot. They've got condos for 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms on site. Legends Resort has 3 golf courses and tons of condos on site. So, you know, buddies come down, whether it's a group of 4, 8, 16, you know, they can all stay in a condo together. If they're not looking for that hotel experience, that's fine. So, you know, every little niche has a different, you know, something about it. Myrtle Beach has, you know, the downtown excitement, nightlife feel. North Myrtle's, you know, got the family-friendly atmosphere. And then yeah. Pawleys Island is a little more scenic and slower. You know, it's got a different pace to it down there. So it doesn't really matter what you're looking for. We probably have it for you. We just got to know what you're into.
This is true. And having experienced pretty much every part of Myrtle Beach at every speed, varying stages of life, there really is something for everybody, and there's a different kind of golf for everybody. You mentioned a 5th round, the championship round. How do folks qualify for that, and what is that atmosphere like after the 72 holes are done?
So when there's 3,000 people, obviously we try and make the first 4 days close to a PGA Tour event as we can, you know, with pairing people up by the scoreboard on the 4th day to give that little extra touch to it. But if you're really lucky and if you win your flight of your 50 players, then you get a chance to move on to Friday, which is the mecca. This is we take out the dive club, so we have tee times going off on double tee on Friday after Friday morning. You know, we've got a monster board with a manual scoreboard just like at the U.S. Open. We've got signage on all the different holes. You know, it gives you that those lucky 100 participants that are able to make it that far, they're going to get to feel what the PGA Tour players get to feel. They got complimentary breakfast in the morning, complimentary lunch after they play in the players' clubhouse. You know, it's very special and unique. And if you're lucky enough to get there, it's something you probably won't forget. You know, live scoring, we've got 3,000 fans watching from home. You know, you send it out to your family. You can check it out online with the live leaderboard. It's very unique, and I think it's something that not a lot of people, you know, like you or I, will ever get to experience. But if you're lucky enough and you play some decent golf in comparison to your handicap, everybody's kind of got a chance.
It really is it's a spectacle in one sense, but it's also a really cool community in another, and I can't wait to take part in it for the first time this year. It's going to be really cool. But for folks who maybe were on the tail end of sign-up but for folks who want more information or somehow did not get a sense of how fun this is going to be from our conversation, what's the best way for them to learn more?
You can learn more at MyrtleBeachWorldAmateur.com. And I know, Ryan, you said you're coming and you're bringing a group with you. Ryan, I know you got a deal worked out, so if anybody wants to come join you down here, we'd love to have any listeners come out with your group, and we'll make sure to show you guys a good time.
Again, that URL to find out all the package information is thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. Find out about the discount, full package involving hotel accommodations, or just the entry itself. Either way, you're going to save money with us as opposed to going directly through the good folks at the Myrtle Beach World Am. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Next week, we probably should have a show. We won't have one related to the 4th of July, obviously, so happy Independence Day to all of my American friends, and happy belated Canada Day to all of our Canadian listeners. But next week, we will be in French Lick, Indiana. Going to be there on a familiarization trip, going to play in the Symetra Tours Pro-Am. They're going to be at the resort that week playing the Ross course. They have a Ross and a Die course. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll have some fun there as well. Then we're going to go up to the U.S. Senior Women's Open at Chicago Golf Club. That's going to be incredible. It's the first one. Not a lot of people know this is happening, but you should, and we're going to tell you about it. We're going to be up there on Friday, and it's going to be fantastic. All right, check out all our work on golfnewsnet.com. If you listen to this show via iTunes, check out our podcast page. Please give us a 5-star review. Helps us reach more people. And until next time, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.